Hello, Internet. This is Chase Wassenaar, and welcome to Steam Cleaners, presented by the Rough Drafts Podcast Network. Each episode, I and my lovely co-host play some games, games we haven't played before on this podcast, and then we come together and we talk about them for you lovely listeners to sit back and enjoy. And when I am referring to my co-host, I am referring to, of course, Walter C80's Fetchuk. Walter, how you doing, man?
Hi, my name is Walter. I'm 32 years old. I'm officially an adult because I asked for a new set of pants for Christmas and I got them. And they're nice pants.
Look, man, pants are great. New pants? 10 out of 10.
No, pans. Pans. Like kitchen utensils.
Oh, okay. That's fair too. I mean, look, I asked and received socks and was thrilled about it. So I think you and I are right on the same wavelength, my friend. Oh, goodness. I guess we didn't talk about this last time. We had a different idea for the intro, but now I'm just kind of curious. What is the Christmas gift, which, because Christmas has happened since we last recorded, that you were most excited about? Well, what was the thing that most clicked with you?
I got a brand new set of stainless steel pans. And my partner and I are super ecstatic. And then they ask their parents for a new vacuum. So.
There you go.
Adulting sucks, but also it's my fault because I didn't come up with like anything more it's weird, right? It seems like every other year, like I am super like, oh, I have a bunch of stuff I want. That's all like fun stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. And it just so happened to be that this year was the like adult year where I'm like, yeah, I could use a new wallet. I could use some new pants. I could use some new, like, flannels or Henley, like, casual shirts. Actually, I'm a big nerd. I got one of the Star Wars jackets from the Star Wars Team Liquid collab.
Oh, hell yeah.
I got the gray Imperial jacket, so I'm really excited about that. That was actually, like, a cool gift.
Let's
I just haven't
go,
worn it
Liquid.
Yet, but...
good stuff, man.
Well, TSM doesn't exist anymore, so, you know, I gotta root for somebody, and FlyQuest was abysmal last year, so, I don't know, man. I don't fucking know.
But look, Rogue has pried itself away from the, deadly force known as the Koi Boys, so, you know, they're here for you anytime that you want. But no.
I don't want to be a Mad Lions fan.
Yeah, you're full.
Oh wait, you're talking about Rogue, not Koi. Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah, Viva España, my dude. The all Spanish roster except for the coach, because that makes sense. But yeah,
no habla español.
all I know is I am very glad that Smolder exists. I'm very here for Spyro, the League of Legends champion.
Nope.
But I will say. His passive better be, I can't take damage because I'm such a cute little boy.
Nope.
Because otherwise it's going to be tough.
I already fucking hate him.
Why do you hate him? He's such a cute little
think
guy.
I think he looks ugly as shit. I think that is a fucking terrible character model. Like, I don't want a human-looking dragon. Like, that's weird. I don't like it. I really don't like it. And I just know the internet is already going to make some really fucking weird porn of it. And I'm really like, I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I just don't.
No.
Fuck you, Riot. That's terrible.
I mean, the porn thing, you can't really blame Riot. There's nothing they could do that's not going to lead to some very weird porn.
But I can blame them for the character design because it looks like garbage.
Man, see, this is funny because I loved it and my friend who I was talking to about it loved it. And then I went on Reddit and everyone's feeling like you are. And I couldn't understand it. And I guess now I have experienced it firsthand. So I get how they got there for better and for worse. I
didn't explain anything. I think it looks terrible.
Yeah, well, that's like people were saying, like they think it looked more human than like a Spyro. I didn't think that was a problem, but obviously you feel very strongly about it. So I guess I'm missing something. All I know is I don't know how he competes with Aurelion Sol, who can summon literal galaxies just for funsies with a basic attack. I just feel like there might be a power imbalance there. But
yeah, I mean, it's weird, right? Because it is sort of like the three different kinds of dragons. Like, you literally have like the galaxy dragon, which is like a dragon, right? Mm-hmm. Alshin, I'm sorry, Aurelion Sol, not Alshin. Aurelion Sol. Mm-hmm. And then you have like the human dragon in Shyvana, which is like, I get it. It's from a kind of a different time. Like, it's kind of a interesting idea of this, like, you know, can transform into a dragon type person, dragonborn thing. Like, hey, whatever. And then you have a fucking cartoon character. And I thought we all agreed after Zoe, we were done with coming up with mascots for the game. Like, I don't want cutesy cartoon characters. I would like video game characters that match the other designs of the video game. Like, that looks like a skin. Like, that looks like that should be a skin in Smite. And I love Smite, but like, it doesn't match the rest of the League of Legends like identity. And if we're going towards this like more kind of like cartoony Nick Jr. design palette, like, I already don't play a lot of the game. You're just pushing me out the door, man.
Wow. That is harsh towards what I think is just a cute little dragon guy. But you know what? We're not here to discuss where League of Legends has gone wrong, because that would be a much longer podcast. We are here to discuss some games that we have been playing. And I'm curious, Walter, what have you been playing the last couple weeks?
So we're here to discuss League of Legends Wild Rift.
Damn it. I knew we'd get there.
No, I don't like playing games on my phone. My phone is too small of a screen. I don't like it. I like to play my games on the very expensive computer that I built for myself 8 years ago. Which is funny, because Chase, you know, I've mentioned before that I sometimes feel like gatekeeped from being like a nerd, right? That I haven't played certain video games. I haven't watched certain movies. I didn't know what Mystery Science Theater 3000 was until I watched it with my partner and her parents on Christmas Eve day. So something happened like a month and a few days ago where a game was on sale for free because it happened to be the anniversary of the game being released. And me being the fucking pack rat that I am, I grabbed it, right? I'm like, oh, I'm going to grab the game. I'm never going to think about it. I'm never going to play it, whatever. And then the funny thing is I've been playing another game, but like, I'm not anywhere close to beating it. And it was a game that I was playing back after Inscription. But then I'm like, well, I need more time to like play this and beat this game so I can talk about it. So then I played Firewatch. And then the same thing happened where I'm like, shit, I need more time to like keep playing this game. Cause it's a roguelike. Like, you know, you need time to beat those. So then I did Orwell, and then obviously the end of the year with Thirsty Suitors. And then like the holidays happened. And I'm like, shit, like, I didn't actually play this other game back when it was timely. So I played Half-Life. Because back in November, it was the 25th anniversary of Half-Life. And other than like maybe like 10 hours of Counter-Strike, I've never played anything that Valve made other than the Portal series. Mm-hmm. So I've never played like their FPSs. And I said, fuck it. I want to play the thing that put Valve on the map and then created the monstrosity that we now know and love as Steam. Mm-hmm.
And you played the original, right? Not like the Black Mesa remake that came out a couple years back? Because I know there have been plenty of remastered projects trying to bring the old game into the new era. But correct me if I'm wrong, you went with the original, right?
Correct. I played the Half-Life game that was just... It just got a 25th anniversary like update to it that just... like cleaned up some stuff. Like, it's a lot of, you look through like the patch log for it, it's a lot of like bug fixes and some graphical updates and some like sound tweaking and things like that. But nope, this is fucking Half-Life.
Got it. So I guess with that, let's start with the thing that I always struggle with some of these older games. How does it feel to go back to a game whose gameplay was last refined in 1998? Does it feel fluid and capture? Were you able to capture that like old era, or did you find yourself missing some of the things that have become commonplace in Valve games since then?
So, like, here's the thing, right? I tried to go back, and this is way before the podcast, right? Mm-hmm. I think back when the newest Deus Ex game came out, I bought, like, the bundle of all the Deus Ex games. I was like, oh, I'm going to try and play the original Deus Ex, because I was, like, a huge fan of watching Co-Carnage at the time, and he, like, would always talk about the franchise. I was like, well, before I play the new one, like, let me go back and try and play the old one. I think I played, like, 20 minutes of it, and I was like, what the fuck? This is terrible. Like, what am I supposed to do? This looks like shit, like, whatever. And I have had this problem of playing some older games where just because the graphics are 10, 15, 20 years old, like, I have some problems playing them visually that they hurt. Like, they give me migraines and things. So I undertook this project of playing this game and told myself, you know, and prepared myself and sat down across from myself and said, listen, like, you are playing this game because this is the forebearer of the FPS genre, essentially, right? This is like, this is one of, and I'm never going to play like Quake, right? I'm never going to play Quake. I'm never going to play like System Shock just because I'm not like a Doom guy. But I'm like, this is a game where I think I can kind of get into it because this is more of like a more traditional FPS instead of being this like run and gun, you know, jump all over the place type thing where it really relies on movement and strafing. And I was kind of wrong about that. Like, this is supposed to be movement strafey, kind of bouncing around a little bit, but it not to the depth of something like a Quake, right? Mm-hmm. And I sat down with myself and said, you're playing something that was made 25 years ago. The reason you are playing it is because it is the 25th anniversary of this game. Like, if you need to take a break because the graphics hurt your eyes, take a break. If you're getting frustrated with it, take a break, right? Like, allow yourself those moments, but realize, like, you are playing this because of what it is, right? Because this is as close to the original experience you're going to get, and it's something that you probably should experience. So I did. And I have to say, it was really easy for me to forget that this game was 25 years old, other than the graphics. Like, the graphics are like, this is an old game. Just looking at it, it's an old game. But you also could have told me that, like, oh yeah, this was a game made last year that specifically was using the graphics from 1998. And I'd be like, yeah, that fucking tracks. It ran really well. I didn't run into like any crazy bugs or any glitches or any things like that. And it is a pretty standard linear FPS single player experience, right? I didn't play multiplayer stuff. I only played the single player stuff, but it felt familiar to me. It felt really familiar to me. It felt, even though it was a new pair of shoes to me, it felt comfortable, right? It felt like I had played this game before, and not in like a negative, like, this is passe, like, I've played a million copies of this game, but it felt familiar and comfortable to me in a way where I kind of like was able to zone out for a few hours at a time and just be like, all right, yeah, I'm fucking digging this. And I did something which I never do. I played it mouse and keyboard and not with a controller.
Wow, that is big for you, because you
and
that
is huge for me.
We both grew up playing more console than PC games, at least for games like shooters. So yeah, I mean, that's how this game was built, right? It was built with keyboard and mouse in mind, and controller stuff didn't come until it was released on the PlayStation a couple years after its initial release. So I mean, I'm just glad to hear that it felt so smooth from a gameplay experience. I am realizing as I'm kind of looking through the wiki that this is Half-Life pre-Gravity Gun, right? That didn't really come into the sequel. So what weapons are you playing with? What resonated with you as you were kind of navigating these levels and trying to find your advantages? Because I know that kind of versatility with the arsenal is something that people often cite with Half-Life is like one of the reasons it's such a classic.
So I think like the versatility of the arsenal more has to do with one, like, conserving ammunition, right, and understanding the types of weapons that you're going to be able to get on a map. When you're on, you know, when you're in the science complexes and military stuff, like, you're going to get a lot of ammunition for the assault rifle. You're going to get grenades. You're going to get the shotgun ammunition, the handgun ammunition. You're not going to get a lot of, like, the alien weaponry, which there isn't a lot of it. But then when you get to, like, the alien kind of planets, like, there is not a lot of ammunition. And that was actually something I struggled with, that because I am such a terrible shot that I got to, like, the alien planets towards the end and I was like, oh shit, like, I don't have a lot of ammunition to, like, fuck around with. Like, I have to figure out what is the most efficient way of killing these monsters, right, these enemies, that way I can try and conserve ammunition and figure out what to do towards the end. And, like, it's really about understanding what you can get away with for certain enemies. Like, it took me a long time to realize there is, like, I think it's like a Gauss rifle of some sorts that you can charge up and you can launch it, like, and it deals way more damage, right? And it took me actually having to go look at a playthrough because I got stuck at one part. I couldn't figure out where I was supposed to go. And I kind of, like, watched it a little bit and I was like, oh, wait, I've been, like, wasting all these grenades and rockets and shit on tanks trying to kill them. When it's like, oh, if you just take the Gauss rifle and fully charge it, you kill a tank in one shot. I'm like, I'm an idiot. Like, I wish I knew that earlier.
Yeah.
There's like some fun where there's these very large aliens that sort of chase you around. And once I, like, figured out how to deal with them was not just to shoot them with rockets or shotguns or assault rifle and just waste it. And it was utilize your remote detonators, utilize the mines, like the mines, especially the trip mines, was like, once I figured that out and, like, was running them around in circles, like, it made them a lot easier to deal with. And again, like, there's a familiarity to it, right? I almost wanted to save this kind of towards more the end of my discussion, but I see so much of Halo in this game. I see so much of what the Halo series becomes in Half-Life.
Mm-hmm.
Direct, not like one-for-one level design, not that kind of thing, but just the linear kind of, like, you're going to start with this. You're going to start with a handgun. You're going to start with you get a shotgun. And the slow addition of weapons and the ammo types and the lack of ammunition that you're going to get in certain levels because you're not running into those types of enemies. There is a one, like, heavy weapon that is, like, a homing. They're, like, little, like, flies almost, but little, like, dart rockets that recharge that reminded me of the Needler from Halo. You know, just little things like that, that when I say, like, there was a comfort to it, I assume people that played Half-Life, you know, back in 98, back in 2000, that when they, you know, came into a kill zone or a Halo in the late 2000s, like, it's the opposite effect. It's like, oh my God, this reminds me of Half-Life type thing. Which is really fun. It's like really fun to have played the more modern stuff and then go back and be like, oh shit, like, they were doing this stuff 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Like, that's so fucking cool.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is, like, I think it's always fascinating to look at how gaming history has evolved, right? Because obviously these things took inspiration from Half-Life. Half-Life's been cited by so many different game devs. It was on an engine that was relatively easy to unpack and that has been used by plenty of companies since then. And it absolutely hit on a theme and a style that, you know, I'm not surprised that, like, Halo took advantage of it, right? Valve, there's a reason the Valve was as big as they were when they were primarily a game developer still. And it's because they understood how to make an experience that matched what players were looking for, right? Like, that kind of, like, linear progression in which it feels like you're getting more and more powerful over time as more and more powerful challenges are coming your way, and your ability to feel smart as you delve into, like, certain, you know, counters of various enemy strategies is really important. And it feels great. And there's a reason that, you know, so many games have replicated that since. I am curious about the story here and how that resonated with you. You know, when people talk about Half-Life and the narrative, I think they often are talking about Half-Life 2. I will admit that as I've been listening and looking at the wikis and things, there have been a number of times in which I was looking for a thing and then realized, oh, that was in the second one. How is the story of this one? Did it draw you in? Were you engaged with it beyond just the gameplay?
No, not really. And I think that is sort of a byproduct of the time, that because you are progressing through these levels, right? You're getting from point A to point B. You're really limited in the amount of storytelling that can happen outside of just like exposition with the scientists or the soldiers that, you know, the guards that you come across that are not trying to kill you, right? You do get some exposition from them explaining things that are going on. You know, oh my God, the military is after, you know, it's killing us. They're not letting us out. Like all these types of like little things. And then you get a much larger exposition dump towards the end that like explains what's been going on. And you know, Chase, would you be surprised to know that this is because they want the resources that are on this planet Zen, that is a border world essentially. And because of what you did, you've now, the humans have now conquered this planet and are going to strip it for resources, right?
What? Are you saying human greed might be the villain of the story?
Yeah, actually, yes. Human greed is the villain of the story and the military industrial complex that funds it.
Interesting. Novel concept, yeah, I know.
Weird, like sacrificing like civilians for the betterment of the military. Weird. We never talk about anything like that. Mm-hmm. And like that being said, it doesn't mean it's a bad story. It just means like I wasn't playing the game for the story. I think we all kind of do have some understanding of Half-Life as a whole, right? Kind of the Gordon Freeman story is something that I think we've all experienced in one way or another. Like, I can't tell you the number of Half-Life 2 speedruns I've watched at like fucking Summer Games Done Quick or Awesome Games Done Quick, right? Mm-hmm. Things like that. Like, it exists in, I can't believe I'm gonna fucking say this word, but it exists in the zeitgeist in a way that's, you know, you kind of know what's going on, right? You don't need to sit and listen to every conversation. You don't need to sit and try and find, you know, every single Easter egg or go read 1,000 pages of lore and analysis. Like, the plot is 4 paragraphs on Wikipedia. Like, that's all you fucking need, baby. And the game gives that to you while you are traversing the hallways of Black Mesa, while you are, you know, coming out of the underground of the science bunker. Like, all of these things are conveyed to you in a way that helps you add some context to just keep moving forward. But at the end of the day, you're continuing to move forward, right? That is what the game is you are continuing to move forward. And the level design and the progression of the game itself does a really good job of continuing to, it allows you to go back and explore, but it doesn't give you, like, there's no reason to, right? You unlock a door, you solve a puzzle, and it's like, cool, now go. Mm-hmm. Like, keep going. In a way that, like, I know some games would do something like, oh, you know, the floors below you are, you know, on fire, right? And they're burning their way up and, like, forcing you up. It just does that by, like, leaving nothing for you to do, so you're kind of forced to continue going on through the complex until, you know, you eventually beat the game.
Yeah, you know, that is interesting, right? Is this idea of, you know, how much should you be investing in narrative in a game like this? I think the Doom series that came out recently, just from watching some Let's Plays of it, right? Like, one of the core, I don't want to say jokes, but certainly ongoing kind of factors is that the Doom guy doesn't give a shit about the plot. He'll actively destroy people trying to give him more exposition, or destroy the radio that's trying to call in and explain things to him, because the important thing is that there are demons here and it's our fault and we got to kill all the demons now. And there's some value in that, right? Like, not every game needs to be super in depth to have value and to have players engaged with it. It certainly seems like something, I'd be curious if you're planning on playing the sequel, just because I know the sequel does spend more time on some of the plot side of things. And obviously the gravity gun is such an iconic kind of weapon within gaming in general. Did this revisit make you want to continue through with the series?
No.
Okay.
And that is not because I think like Half-Life 2 is bad or anything, right? I'm not like judging it or anything, ahead of time. But I wanted to engage with the original Half-Life because I don't think I've ever engaged with it before. You know, like I said, I've watched Half-Life 2 speedruns. Like, you know, I kind of know some of the beats to it. I, you know some of it. And I feel like there's a part of me that would want to experience it in that way, you know, the speedrunning kind of way, instead of actually like sitting and playing through it. And I've touched on that enough where I don't feel like I have to go and play through it, right? I've watched enough episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation where I don't feel like I have to go through and watch every single episode of it to understand Star Trek, right? Mm-hmm. I'll say this way. I have watched episodes of Doctor Who. I've watched, you know, all the Eccleston and all the David Tennant ones where I know a lot of the plot beats to, you know, the Judy Whittaker and to Capaldi and to Matt Smith, where I don't feel the need that I just, you know, finished watching the new Doctor Who specials and I've, you know, within the last 2 months finished watching all the Doctor Tennant or the David Tennant ones. I don't feel the need that I immediately have to go in and now watch Matt Smith or else I'm going to be missing out on something. Will I play it one day? Absolutely. Like, I'll absolutely play Half-Life 2 someday. But I don't feel the need to be like, I immediately have to go play Half-Life 2 now because I feel like I'm going to be missing something by putting a lot of time in between Half-Life 1 and 2. Like, they've been around for 20 years. Like, I can get to it eventually and I'm not going to miss something. I'm not missing out on some cultural touchstone by waiting some more time for it. Whereas I feel like by playing Half-Life now, and I really do wish I played it a month ago, so it was a little bit more, you know, timely with the release, not for like SEO purposes, but just because like a lot of people were talking about it, you know, a month and a half ago. I feel like there was a reason to do it now, right? It was a reason to do it in this specific window. And I feel like if I didn't do it for this episode, I probably wouldn't have played it, right? But because I had that connection to this, you know, cultural moment, I was like, I got to be engaged with it. I got to give it a try now. And that's one thing like I'm very bad at, right? Where I see all these games that are, you know, made and everything. And, you know, I want to play Dave the Diver. If I don't get it on this winter sale, am I going to remember about Dave the Diver by the time the spring sale comes around or the summer sale comes around? Probably not. And then, you know, a year from now, I might be reminded about it and go like, oh, yeah, I should really go back and play that game. And then it keeps being this like down the road, I'll eventually get to it. So to answer your question, no, I'm not immediately going to go play Half-Life 2. But I am really, really glad that I let this moment in time grab me and held on to me long enough for me to play Half-Life 1, because it feels right? It feels comfortable. I'm going to go back to that. It just felt comfortable to play it. And you're going to ask me, oh, do I recommend it? Like, yeah, fuck yeah. Like, it was awesome. It was a great experience. And if you have any kind of attachment to those, you know, sci-fi angled shooters, or even Doom or Quake, like, it's a fucking great game. And it's really cool to go backwards and go, well, I really enjoyed Halo, and Halo's kind of my first like gaming experience, right? More adult gaming experience, the original Halo Combat Evolved on Xbox. And then to like go back and see where it came from, it is really fucking cool.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you really enjoyed it. I do think, you know, it's very easy to, you know, focus on what's new and what's all, you know, in the zeitgeist of the moment, right? What people are talking about as new things are coming out. But there's a reason that these gaming history moments are what they are, and Half-Life is certainly one of those. Where I'm glad that you played it, and I'm glad that you enjoyed it and are recommending it here. I don't know, just as somebody who doesn't play a lot of FPS games myself, when I'll ever get around to it, but I am certainly more interested in doing so now than I would have been before you play it. So well done on that point, if nothing else.
I will say, just because I'm like looking through the Wikipedia here, just kind of, you know, paying attention, and I see a line here describing it as Die Hard meets Evil Dead. It's not a horror game, but it is like, it is creepy, right? And the noises that are constantly happening around you, and like, it sounds like it's literally on the other side of the wall, but you can't get to the other side of the wall. And then like 10 minutes later, you finally get over there and there's something there. There's not a lot of like, there's some like, I don't want to say jump scare because it's not really jump scare, but some jump scare moments. But there is a atmosphere and an intensity to that atmosphere that really reminds me again of like those Halo Flood levels, where you're just kind of like traveling through a place and you're like, I know something bad is here. When is the bad thing going to happen? And it's just the slow bubbling anxiety that happens. I know that's probably like pushing you further away from playing the game, but I like really appreciated it. And there was something really neat about playing it at like 1 o'clock in the morning, like someone probably did 25 years ago, and just like hearing all these clanging noise and being like, bro, what the fuck is going on? But Chase, with that being said, you gave me some screenshots of the game that you've been playing, and I definitely said, what the fuck is going on? Mm. So, Chase, what the fuck is Class of 09?
Ah, I'm so glad you asked, Walter. Class of 09 is a visual novel. The first one came out in 2021, and the sequel came out in June of last year. And by sequel, I do mean more of like a tangential story. It's a newer story, and it's slightly ahead of the, you know, makes use of what happened in the first game, but is more of like, what if other things happened during that time period instead, since this is one of those visual novels in which the goal is to see all of the possible endings, to get a view of the whole spectrum of what is possible in hopes of coming to some greater understanding. This is something that we see in a lot of visual novels nowadays. Slay the Princess is a game that I'll hopefully be having friend of the pod Shay on to talk about at some point when we finally have enough time to play it, and uses a very similar concept in a much more like atmospheric horror perspective. Class of 09 calls itself a rejection sim. It is a visual novel that is taking place. You know, you kind of are controlling the anime girl that is typical in these stories. A girl named Nicole, and you are dealing with all of the bullshit that gets thrown her way, and trying to navigate it as best you can, knowing that the deck is stacked against you from the beginning. And to explain what I mean by this, I want to set the scene for you, right, Walter? You load up this game, and the very first thing you see is a black screen with white text asking, why are you playing this? It's the very first thing you see. When you go to the menu, you find that the option to quit is labeled go outside. And anytime you go to leave, you know, go back to the main menu while you're playing, the game says, you sure about that? I know where you live. Fantastic.
Oh god.
It is right off the cuff setting this scene of like, you know, this is not a story in which everything's going to go great. And indeed, like, for a game that is technically labeled as a comedy on Steam, I'm going to emphasize the dark in dark comedy. Given the number of endings that are involving or tangential to suicide. But like, this is the very start of the game is you learning that Nicole Her mom has been divorced 8 times. They're constantly moving, so she's never had a chance to sit down. She's got to settle down and, like, make real friends. Her brother is this 27-year-old who hits on minors over Xbox Live and hasn't gotten a job. And her dad committed suicide, leaving a note on the fridge saying it was her fault. Like, what the fuck did I do, is her comment to that. And so she says, like, look, I'm at this point, I'm a sociopath. And I know that sounds evil, but, like, here's everything that's happened to me. And I am going into this new school year knowing that none of this matters, that absolutely nothing matters and everything is bound to go horribly wrong. So fuck it. Let's just see what happens. Are you with me so far? I know that's quite the leap, but are you with me?
I mean, Chase, as you're telling me this, I'm scrolling through some of the reviews here. If Life is Strange had an older sister that called me slurs while drinking Four Loko.
Uh-huh.
What if Eric Cartman was a white anime girl in 2007? Let's find out. American Psycho for white women. I'm with you, but I'm also, I graduated in 09. And I'm feeling a little, like, I don't know. They're trying to, like, get to my aesthetic here. And I know I said when you sent me a screenshot, I'm like, oh my god, it's the fucking T-Mobile sidekick. Mm-hmm. What the fuck?
Absolutely.
I guess, Chase, why did you play this game?
Great question.
Fantastic.
It's got an overwhelmingly positive review on Steam, and it's kind of lifted as one of those visual novels that does a good job about subverting the classic expectation, right? This is, you know, the South Park reference is one that I thought about because, especially in the first one, it feels like they're kind of taking shots at everybody, but with a little bit more of, like, a left-wing bent to it, you know? There is a moment in which you find out that your teacher is a white nationalist, your photography teacher, and if one of your friends gets kind of pulled into his bullshit, you have the option to say, maybe it's not so bad after all, which eventually leads to you committing a hate crime on accident and getting arrested for terrorism, or you can agree to disagree like a fence-sitting liberal, and end up getting the FBI or a prominent jihadist group to intervene, both of which have their own separate endings to it. So that's three different endings based on white nationalist nonsense. There is a school shooter ending, because of course there is, if you push the geeky anime guy who has no friends too far. There's an ending in which convince this, like, frat boy jock who very much has hinted on essentially date raping some women that he's been with in the past. You can convince him to jump off the school in order to try to win your love. When he jumps off and he has broken his leg such that he may never walk again, you are able to tell him, "I only date men who can walk." At which point he promptly dies in the hospital, and you can either make a vlog about it to become a YouTuber, or you can exercise the fear that all men have that you can secretly convince them to kill themselves to become valedictorian by making the nerd do all of your homework. This is a fascinating kind of game in that it is enabling psychopathy in a way that feels, at least in the first game especially, both freeing and condemning, right? Like, you need to get all the endings to see what's happened. So there are going to be endings that are bleak, and there are going to be endings where you feel like a bad person. But the game isn't very long. I played all 13 endings and got the extra scene in about just under 3 hours. So you can easily do it in one sitting, and you just keep wanting to see, like, where is the game gonna go next? Sometimes you get stuff that is relatively profound. And I think the game does a very good job, in the original of highlighting, like, what women, especially teenage girls, go through on a regular basis. All of her teachers hit on her in some way, shape, or form. A lot of pedophiles in this game. And there is this idea that, like, yeah, a lot of teenage girls, especially if you are an attractive teenage girl, don't feel safe around male faculty. And if you have any female friends that were once teenagers and have talked to you about this, you will find that while it's probably not everybody at every school, it's more people than you would like. It's a substantially large number in a way that feels real gross and bad. And this game touches on that and touches on how, you know, men put a lot of pressure on women to have sex with them. And this idea that friendships have an ulterior motive. And if they find out that you have been sleeping with somebody else, just because you were more interested in them than you were in, or more interested in that other person than you were in them, then they hate you for it and will run rumors and destroy your life, which is the one that leads her to commit suicide in this game. It's a lot to unpack, and I found that compelling because you could tell that this game really wanted to say something about the human condition and a lot of these experiences that people had. And yes, it's doing so in the most openly shocking way possible, but it's also doing so in a way that feels human in its absurdity. I will say this is an important but here, I do think that especially with the first one, the game can sometimes miss the mark a little bit. There are a couple moments where it gets a little bit on a soapbox, especially concerning how women in power can sometimes enable some of these behaviors in a way that feels very like, you know, women are really their own worst enemy, and that doesn't quite feel right. And the fact that there are three white nationalist endings is something that, it's certainly something in American culture that's worth calling out. And there's a really great line in the first one about how, like, well, yeah, we're in everyone in our school is white, so they're all white supremacists, but he's a white nationalist. Like, they all agree that white culture is best. They just don't all want a white ethno state. And that's something that, as someone who went to private school in the South, like, not wrong. Good point. a lot of white people don't feel comfortable admitting that that's how they feel about things, but it sure comes up a lot. But it's all, you know, there are also no non-white characters in this game. And you can see that as like, oh, well, it's very much a satirical on white culture in general, white upper middle class. Like, there's a very clear target, but it also means that if you're going to have some jihadists burn down a school, that's the only thing you're saying about the Muslim people who were affected by the white nationalists. And I don't know that that's the lesson you want. And obviously, like, you know, you can argue that comedy is meant to be shocking, and that the first game, you know, certainly does that. But it's, you know, what you laugh at is political, right? You know, even if you're not trying to make political jokes, what you are engaging with and what you choose to resonate with and how you resonate with it is inherently political. And the first game definitely left me as a game that someone who has the opposite politics of me, I feel like could enjoy it and draw their own lessons to it in a way that I would be concerned about, because it would be missing the point. But it would be encouraging certain factors that are easy to accidentally encourage if you're not precise. And a game that has 13 different endings in just a under 3-hour runtime, that kind of scattershot nature, it's not surprising that there are some misses in there.
I hear everything you have said.
Mm-hmm.
How is this fun?
Because it's all voice acted by some really talented people. And if you enjoy hearing, like, the worst people you know talk shit, it's fantastic. They capture the bitchy teenage aesthetic really well. They catch a lot of the, like, various types of losers and how they navigate the world very well. You will get a group of high schoolers that feel like high schoolers and are voice acted like high schoolers, which is hard to do. I think a lot of people, it's very easy to be inauthentic. And I think that's the reason ultimately that this game was set in 2009 is because that clearly speaks to the experience of the writer who is trying to capture a very specific lens. And I think that is why, like, you know, some of the things I mentioned were there is because they're like, oh, I'm just not going to write from an experience and I'm not trying to satirize and critique and skewer. But like the reason that I'm talking about all of these elements is because I can't explain comedy to people, right? Like I can say that there is a line about how our protagonist, Nicole, always says things in the meanest way possible and then takes that as a compliment. You know, I could talk about how, you know, but like that doesn't ring as funny because I'm not doing the lines the way that they did and it's not in the context that they did. And I can't recreate the experience of getting a pop-up where you get to choose pretend to be nice or this freak is not getting my name. Or, you know, you know, you have the option humor a pedophile or scream as loud as you can. And then if you do decide to humor him for a moment because your gym teacher is being a creep, you can either date your gym teacher or get sexually harassed by someone your own age. And that's like, there's a shock value to that that doesn't read as funny until it pops up in the middle of a scene when you weren't expecting it. And you like, it works. It's just impossible to explain. But I'll be honest, right? Like the first one I played because I was expecting a comedy and I found something that genuinely was like quite affecting. I felt that it was, it had some good bits and it had some not as good bits. But it was clearly trying to be something and taking a lot of risks and being on the cutting edge to do so, which I found engaging. And that's not where I stopped, Walter, because in 2023, they made the Re-Up. And the Re-Up is a far better game in every possible way. And that's where all the screenshots that I've been sharing with friends are coming from. That's the one where I felt the need to constantly just record the things that were happening. And I really wish I had played on stream because it is genuinely some of the funny in the worst way possible sequences I've ever seen. You know, you get the, I guess here, before I get into that, is there anything else you want to ask about the first one? Because the second one just builds upon that, and I want to make sure our foundation is strong here.
Again, I am hearing everything you say. And this very much could be a, well, you have to be there to get it. Because the late 2000s was very much a, you kind of had to be there to get it. Right? Mm-hmm. I still don't fucking understand Salad Fingers. I don't fucking get what was like funny or creepy or like whatever about it. Like I don't fucking get it. Mm-hmm. The old Greg stuff, like it was funny at the time, but like now I look at it and I go, this is fucking weird and terrible. And you know, the South Park, right? South Park, Family Guy, that kind of stuff. Like there, I feel like at that kind of age, right, that younger age, like it is the funniest thing on the planet, that, and it feels like so adult. But as I'm sitting here listening to this, I just keep in the back of my head being like, okay, but what's fun about that? What's actually funny about it? And it probably is, I'm missing the other context of what's happening around it, right? The reason of why, like, I'm don't want to give this freak my name is because something else is happening. And I guess that is, you know, what you're saying about comedy is like, it's hard to explain comedy sometimes. And I'm looking at this like, okay, but how is that funny? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't get the joke. And maybe that's the problem is that I don't have the lead into the joke so that the punchline doesn't hit if I don't have the story before it. So I'm trying to understand why it might be funny, but I guess I'm missing the context to it. And I don't expect you, and I don't want you to give me like the entire plot of everything that's going on, But like, that's why I'm just so quiet, is because I'm like stuck in my head being like, oh, okay, like this doesn't sound fun.
Well, I mean, first, let's question some notions here. Are all games meant to be fun? Or are some games meant to be experiences? Are some games meant to challenge us and make us think about things? And I would argue that, especially in the visual novel space, you get a lot of people who are a very specific type of person that can be exhausting. And we need games that skewer those expectations, that cause us to question why we just assume that the anime girl should fall in love with us because we said a couple nice things one time, right? But it does so in a way. Here, I'll give you a line from the beginning of the re-up that I think struck me so much that I wrote it down in my notes here, right? If God is an introverted loser sitting in their computer chair, I really hope that they can get me through this. And that right there is the kind of, like, it's self-aware, right? Like, it knows who its audience is. They know the type of people who are playing this. Called out for sure. But also, like, there's a certain angle to this character where, like, she has gone through so much shit. And she is lashing out. And the way that she's lashing out is very funny. And it works because everyone around her is terrible in some way, shape, or form, right? And there's an ending in the re-up that I think really speaks to that, where at some point you have a chance to try lesbianism before college. There's another female character that you can choose to date. And because you are an incredibly unhealthy individual, this immediately turns into a rather abusive relationship, which, you know, luckily the other girl is able to break out of, but not before taking some severe damage, right? And so, you know, Jekka's the best friend character in this says, like, look, this is fucked up, right? And she's like, well, you've been following me through all these other things. It's like, yeah, because you were doing it to men, people who were being creeps. And every time you were like, well, they're going to grow up to be pedophiles or rapists anyway, but this is another woman. And there's something to be said, right, about, like, one, that's a poke at white feminism and to a certain extent, right? The idea that, like, the men don't matter in this equation and that all men are bad. But also, we've seen all the men in this game and they are fucking atrocious. Almost all of them. And so, like, we understand why she's been lashing out. We understand why she's been attacking some of these people. And we don't mind when, for example, she lies to a cop in order to help get her brother arrested for all of the child porn that he has on his computer, right? We're okay with her being sassy and you know, doing whatever extreme thing she needs to do to make that happen, because fuck that brother, right? He's trying to hit up minors on Xbox Live. But when it's some lesbian girl who feels like she's a little bit alone and dated Nicole because she didn't think there were any other lesbians at school and now is, like, going back into the closet because that was such a mentally scarring relationship, like, that fucking hits. And the game is able to lull you into this sense of all of the wacky shenanigans before that, so that when she does cross a line and when her friend finally calls her out on it, it matters. It doesn't work if you don't have all those comedic bits beforehand where you can come to appreciate Nicole and the way that she tears down all these other people. And again, it's hard to explain the comedy without you experiencing the comedy. I'm just kind of asking people to trust me that there's a lot of humor along the way. But the reason I'm focusing so much on the stuff that isn't the humor is because that's the stuff that, one, much easier to talk about, and two, is the stuff that makes this game matter. Like, yes, it is funny that when the two of them, Nicole and her best friend go to a mall and steal a $10 CD, they try to run away from the cops. He shoots her 5 times in the leg because the cops have a game to see how long it will, you know, how many shots they can get off blindfolded and bring the perp down. And it's like, you needed 5 shots to warn her to not do that next time. Like, that's insane. And he gets reassigned to their school. And there's a whole, like there is a PTSD thing that they touch on, but it's also just like such an over the top, absurd takedown of a lot of these dynamics that are worth being taken down a peg. It's, you know, again, I think South Park, but from a more left-wing bent, is fair and certainly more prominent in the second game, but it works because there are the moments where it takes itself seriously. When they take a moment and, you know, the best friend is like, you should really be on SSRIs, like, you should have cried at this traumatic thing that happened. And the fact that you didn't is like really concerning. It's like, oh, were you saying that because you really mean it or because you want to feel better about your own role on this? And she's like, can it be both? And that's very human. It's a fascinating game because, again, if you go on Steam, they're not going to tell you about the dark shit, man. They just call it a comedy. They just focus on the fact that it's so over the top, you know? And that's true. But it is like, it also wants to matter. And I think it, that's what has made it stick with me and made me want to talk about it.
I don't get it.
Well, here, I don't know if we can. Maybe I will upload this one section and put it in the comments of this podcast description. But I think if you can see a scene in action, you'll understand where the humor comes from. You'll understand where the sharpness comes from, and you'll understand why those other moments do matter. But yeah, it's, I mean, fuck, man. How do you explain any comedy? I don't know. How do you explain a comedy that is as dark as this one is and make both of those segments feel like they matter? I don't know. I can tell you here, one funny line that I think is fair to share is that when one of the coaches hits on her, she makes a comment about how, sure, I've had fewer periods than there are states in the U.S., but again, cool that you're flirting with me. It's so hard to explain, and now I'm kind of wishing that I did a stream of this instead of trying to talk about it on the podcast. But I hope if this is the kind of thing that you listening at home enjoy, like you enjoy visual novels and you're here for something that deconstructs certain elements of it, fully voice acted, which is very rare in this genre, and people who do some really good job on the voice acting, I think that is worth, I think it's worth your time, especially the re-up. I'll say the first one I think is a little bit raw. I think it's worth playing, but I like, it's a tentative recommendation for the original. The re-up I think is a genuinely very well-told story. It's going to stick with me for a while, and I'm going to keep sending screenshots to friends out of context for a long, long time.
I feel bad because I don't just want to like shit over something that you clearly liked and feel attachment to, right? But this feels like a tar situation.
I mean,
I hate it because I feel like we've beaten the tar joke to death. I feel bad.
Did Tar have have a whiteboard in the background with Fuck Bush and Bowling for Columbine was a documentary. While the protagonist says, I'd tell you to kill yourself in your garage, but you probably only have a 2-bedroom condo with your pets. Because I don't think Tara would do that.
I see the screenshot that has that whiteboard, and I saw Columbine and went, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know, man.
They also reference Virginia Tech because this keeps fucking happening, and maybe it's good to like have a game that notes how that has a negative effect on teenagers going through it, right?
Also, I'm looking at the video that's playing on Steam, right? And the I don't hang out with rapists. The dude is wearing a blue lacrosse shirt. Is that supposed to be Brock Turner?
Might as well be.
Or is that the Duke rape?
I mean, he fits in for every athletic
thing.
I mean, you can solve for any athlete who like engages in date rape kind of culture for sure.
Gotcha.
It's all there. It's a problem, but like, how many games do you know that actually talk about it, right? Like, there is a reason that South Park has been successful as long as it has been. And I have problems with South Park. I think a lot of its centrist middle grounding is kind of bullshit, and some of it is really not aged well, especially the stuff on climate change. But we as a society have things that are taboo, that are tough to talk about, that are difficult to talk about, depressing to talk about. And we just don't. And that doesn't help, right? Sometimes you need to have these difficult conversations. And if you can do so coming at it from a comedic angle, I think you have a higher chance of landing, you know. But I understand it's asking for a lot, especially when you're not getting the comedy elements with the voice acting and whatnot. I almost want to have us pause here and have you watch the thing and then give a final reaction before we head out. But I feel like that would be really obnoxious for your editing. So I guess we're just going to call it here.
It literally wouldn't be. Just hit stop recording right now.
So what did you think?
I don't get it.
That's fair. I mean, do you have any like deeper thoughts on it now that you've experienced it firsthand?
Oh, it's too real to be funny.
Mm.
That's my problem. It's too real to be funny.
Yeah. But that poignancy keeps you going, right? Like, it is engaging to see a game talk about this shit in a way that feels somewhat real. Surprisingly so for a game that started with a, you know, just anime girl is gonna reject the people around her plot.
Oh, it definitely subverts what expectations in this game looks like. I will give it that. Yeah, I don't know. I play video games to have fun, and I don't think you need to be depressed to learn a message.
I don't think so either, but I also don't think there is any game trying to teach that message.
Fair. Fair. Entirely fair. I won't take that away from you. And I think we are just going to have to agree that this is a tar situation, and I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad you thought the humor was there for you, the messaging was there for you. This is not going on my wish list, I can tell you that much.
Yeah, no, I you know, it is a divisive experience, I would say. You're not playing it for a good time. And I guess that's probably the reason why I focus so much on the dark stuff in this review, is because I don't want people being sideswiped, right? I don't want you going in and expecting like, haha, some funny like South Park-esque humor, and then you see the like real depth of it and go, oh fuck, this is triggering. Because I'll be honest, I had a friend who was very much looking forward to playing it based on the screenshots, and he accidentally went down one of the more depressing paths, and he's like, I cannot do this. Cannot do this right now. Had been having fun beforehand, but it was a bleak ending that resonated with an experience he'd had recently with a friend. And like, I don't blame him, and I don't blame anyone who doesn't play this game. It is a very specific kind of game, but for people who are willing to delve into that and find the, either the humor in the darkness or finding the, you know, this kind of deeper social commentary than almost any game you're going to find out there. There's a reason that 98% of the reviews for this game are positive, because the people for whom this is for, you're not going to find a better game than it. Nothing does this, and that's why I love it. But let me know what you think, those of you listening. Have you played Class of 09? Are you excited for the anime version they're apparently trying to make? Which, like, I don't know, we'll see how that one goes, but, you know, maybe, who knows? But if you want to talk to me about it, you can find me at chasewassenaar.bsky.social. Walter, if they want to talk to you about literally anything else, where can they find you?
You guys can find me at c80s_lol. You can also find me at c80s.bsky.social. You can follow the podcast at Rough Drafts Pod on Twitter, or at roughdraftspodcast.bsky.social. Really didn't think about that one when I made it. I just typed it out, and then it's good to go. You can also listen to the podcast on your favorite streaming platform of choice, either on the individual Steam Cleaners and Final Cut, that's the movie podcast feeds, or on the combined Rough Drafts podcast feed.
Sounds great to me. And you know what else sounds great? Coming back a week from now to listen to our next Final Cut episode, and coming back 2 weeks from now to hear us talk about two completely different games. And I promise my next one won't be as much of a bummer as this one was. So until then, goodbye, Internet.